Welcome to Experiential Marketing Today.
Welcome to this episode of Experiential Marketing Today. This show is about the theory and practice of using experiences to engage audiences with the authentic nature of a brand or company. We believe that it may be the most powerful tool marketers have, but it's also something of a mystery. My name is Todd Austin. I'll be your host for this episode. Episode 2, Transforming Trade Show Tactics into Experiential Excellence. In this episode, we'll discuss how, with careful planning, you can transform your trade show marketing into a powerful experiential tool that generates results. In our previous episode, we defined experiential marketing. As we concluded, we made the point that the easiest place to start building your experiential marketing program is to look at your current activities and identify those areas where you meet with your customers and prospects face-to-face. Since involvement and participation are essential to experiential marketing, these in-person activities are your best bet for getting a program off the ground. Trade show marketing is one such activity, and that's the topic we'll be discussing today. John Robertson joins us again. Now, John, it's a little strange to talk about transforming our trade show marketing into an experiential tool, just because trade shows seem to be all about experiences to start with. Why does this need fixing?
Well, they're about experiences for sure, but it's an experience in overstimulation. It's kind of like a really bad sitcom, Todd, a cross between The Bachelor and an international market or bazaar where all these peddlers are kind of coming at you and offering their wares. It's even reminiscent of the Strip in Las Vegas at night. Just so much bling, so much visual noise, and it's an experience overload, but it's also an experience that most marketers don't control.
And over time, we've reduced our trade show marketing to I show up, I set up my booth, which is, I guess, essentially just a big sign. I give away the happy fun ball with our logo emblazoned on the side, shake hands, smile, pack up, and go home.
So we're standing there, or worse, we're sitting there under our big sign, and it's in the middle of this gigantic room full of big signs, and we're waiting on someone to notice us and come up and pick up our brochure. This is not experiential marketing. Experiential marketing is about personally engaging our audience in the authentic nature of the brand. And I really doubt that the scenario we've described is the authentic nature of any brand. But it probably hits close to home for a lot of folks, don't you think?
Oh, I do. And there's also this stat, which is sobering. Many of us, when we go to a trade show, think, well, we've got 3 days to get the attention of the person that we're targeting. But statistics show that the average attendee only spends about 1 day walking the trade show floor.
Todd, they're going to see the people that they want to see first, either because of some agenda or some relationship that they have already, or because some sort of a solicitation or marketing message that came at them rang with resonance. And so then they're just going to walk the floor, whatever they can, the remaining period of the time. The problem with that is we only have the small window to rise above the visual noise and capture their attention. And the odds are that most of the people we want to talk with and meet with are not going to notice us unless we do something that really breaks out of the norm.
So clearly, there is some work that we can do here. We painted a pretty bleak picture, and yet you and I know that trade shows are a highly effective way to market when done correctly. So how do we get from here to there?
The key is to break out of the show floor mentality. We've got to start by changing the way we approach trade shows. And the critical element to changing the way we think about trade shows is a 360-degree plan. Todd, a 360 plan is pre, at, and post-show marketing. Most people just don't do it, and the results are mediocre at best. But if it can be done, I think our audience will notice dramatic changes in their results.
So let's break that down. What happens in the pre-stage?
The pre-stage is about setting objectives. It's about planning. It's about making contacts. As you think about setting objectives, you might say, for example, you want to sign up 15 premium dealers for your new product line. Well, there are several things that that does for you right away. First of all, it narrows your focus. We're not going after dealers who might carry our modest or economy product line. We're going after dealers who want to carry the premium product line. it also gives us something to measure, and we can't improve what we can't measure. So by measuring, we're able to set a standard or a watermark that we compare our results to next year, but we also compare our investments to this year as we measure our return on investments. The last thing is, and this is huge, it relieves us from having to be everything to everybody, because we don't want to do business with everybody at the trade show. Now, some people in the audience will say, well, sure we do. We want to do business with everybody. We don't. We want people who look like our best customers, or we want people who meet a certain type of firmographics or a certain SIC code or industry code or size. And so to do that effectively, we have to target who we want to go after.
And that seems like one of the things that people have a hard time letting go of. I have to send cards to everyone.
Oh, it's totally. So much of what we do because of habit. The thought of sending postcards to everyone who's coming to the show is equivalent to the thought that as we encounter some of our clients who come in and say, you know, I've got to find a really great ink pen, because we always give away ink pens and people look so forward to receiving our ink pen. And, you know, why are we giving away this ink pen? What's the purpose of this blasted ink pen? Well, people get in a habit of doing these things. And similarly, they send out postcards to everybody. And so in sending out postcards to everybody, what they forget is their competition is on that list. Their fellow exhibitors are on that list. There are a lot of discretionary or non-targeted audience members that are on that list that really shouldn't be.
This setting objectives part of the pre-show plan sounds like it's really important. And there's this phrase that we hear from time to time from customers that we've both come to dread. The phrase is, wouldn't it be cool if... dot, 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 you fill in the blank after that. The phrase comes before we've ever set an objective. It's a symptom of a customer getting tactics before strategy. Last time I checked, cool is not a strategic objective. It's not measurable for most businesses.
Coolness is not an objective. And now what I think you're doing is you're really hitting on what separates good companies in experiential marketing from great companies. Because good companies will use hijinks and tactics and efforts that are just novel. And great companies will use strategies that are on brand and on message and that create very memorable exchanges with their audience.
They find a way to be cool after they've decided what they want to achieve.
Coolness is the byproduct of being on strategy.
Let's get back to your original point. You mentioned two other parts of the pre-stage, planning and making contact.
Well, so that now that we know who we're targeting and we know what we want them to do, we have to decide how we're going to do that. And the first step in that process is planning. We've got to create this opportunity for our target group to experience and interact and personally relate to the authentic nature of our brand. Lots of options come to mind. It may be an offsite meeting that goes on in conjunction with the trade show. It may be some sort of very impressive, interactive in-booth experience. But we also think about questions like, what is our competition going to do? So that part of the planning stage starts to formulate. How are we going to do this? What is going to be our strategy for doing this? But similarly, there is a contact strategy. And we think in our contact strategy about what is the message that we want to relate and to what audience do we want to relate that to? And how can we make that message engaging and full of impact and memorable? And how can we offer it to the audience in a way that really underscores this experience that they're having with their brand?
It feels like that this messaging piece is easier if we've done the first part, which is setting the objective and narrowing our target. We can get someone's attention if we can spend more on how we communicate with them, and we can spend more if we do it for less people.
I totally agree with that philosophy. This is really about now taking the resources we have and honing them very precisely.
So it seems like most of the mental heavy lifting happens in the pre-show stage. We've set our objective, we've made our plan for what we're doing at the show, and we've done our contact strategy. Let's spend some time on the at-show part of the 360. What happens here?
The at-show part of the 360 plan is all about the execution. In a pre-show activity, we develop the plan. Now we have to work the plan, as they say. And several things come to mind, Todd. First, we've got to allow for the unexpected. There's a great quote. I can't pronounce the name of the guy who said it. I think he's a famous Viking from days gone by. But he said, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. And the thought there is we've got to adjust the battle plan when we're right there on the battle floor, engaged in competitive strategies with everyone who's coming to the exhibit.
That's important because, as anyone who's ever been to a trade show knows, there are way too many moving parts for us to expect that our carefully laid pre-show plan is going to come off perfectly. So I guess it makes sense that we have to expect the unexpected. What else happens at show?
The second thing to really consider is that everything must be on message. If we fail at anything, we can't fail at delivering the key message to the target audience that we've chosen. We've also got to think about part of the extension of that message and part of the extension of the brand are the people who are representing us within the booth, and they've got to really know what the objectives are that we're going for. We've got to train them in good boothmanship. Good boothmanship is very different than good salesmanship or being effective at doing a presentation. They've got to know how to engage with an audience in that brief period of time on the trade show floor. And they also have to be equipped to recognize our target audience and their strategies for how to do that.
Okay, so we've got to expect the unexpected. We've got to stay on message. And we've got to train our people well. Is there anything else that happens at show?
We've got to track everything we're doing at show against our objectives. And doing that gives us a great feedback loop where we can make improvements for the future.
Okay, so let's talk some now about the post-show stage. What happens there?
Well, the post-show stage is about follow-up. Here's a similarly gloomy statistic for you. Would you believe that of those folks who get leads at trade shows, only about 25% of those follow up after a trade show?
That's a very disappointing statistic.
And what's that all about? You know, they have worked so hard to get these engagements, these opportunities, these leads, and then somehow the system breaks apart. I have a theory as to why that happens. It happens because we haven't planned on the front end what the follow-up strategy will be on the back end. Are you tracking with me?
I think so. If I haven't planned ahead of time, I go to the show, I come back from the show, I'm exhausted. My desk is piled up with all the things that need to take place when I get back that have been waiting for me. I don't have a plan for follow-up, so I don't do it.
That's right. Just by the act of doing follow-up, you're going to be better than the average exhibitor on the trade show floor. We've got to create that follow-up plan in advance. The other thing we've got to do as a post-show strategy is we've got to ask ourselves, how did we compare against the objective? So many companies tragically forget to close the loop in the 360-degree process of getting that feedback in so that we can improve things going forward. We've got to think about what did we learn and how do we apply that for next time. And that technique of getting that feedback and applying that feedback loop, Todd, that transcends size of companies. Any size company can learn and gather feedback from show to show or year to year to make improvements for the future.
And if you do that, it doesn't take very long for you to start seeing dramatic improvements in your results.
Really dramatic.
Let's walk through an example of this 360 plan in action.
Sure. We've got a healthcare client who delivers online learning and continuing education to nurses throughout healthcare systems across the country. As we met with this client and went through an exercise we call a discovery session, what we concluded was that the key point of differentiation for this client in the way in which they deliver online learning, which a number of competitors do, is their personal, nurturing approach.
That's unusual for an internet company.
It's very unusual, but they believe very strongly that that's what sets them apart. So as you see this differentiator come to life, you see that being elevated now to set a stage for how can we creatively collaborate with this client to bring about a very memorable marketing experience.
If that nurturing element was the authentic nature of the brand, then we're trying to create an experience that allows someone to know that about the brand.
Exactly. What's interesting about this client is that they were very habitual in their trade show strategies and that they were kind of doing the same old, same old. They were, as you described earlier, they were putting up the booth. They weren't doing much in addition to just showing up at the trade show. As we collaborated them and identified these key brand differentiators, we then persuaded them to think about how could we retool some of the resources they had, or how could we invest additional resources that were very measurable, that we had very much the ability to track, into initiatives that would bring their target audience in conversation with them, would allow them to engage with their target audience. Now, notice I'm choosing my words carefully, because in this case, it wasn't about bringing their target audience to their booth, although we did deliver against that. It was really about providing a way to engage and interact with and converse with their target audience. We thought about that target audience. They wanted to go after these nurse supervisors, but they wanted to go after the industry's best, large healthcare organizations, not an average size healthcare organization, but the larger ones. And we knew that those nurse supervisors were highly underappreciated, like most folks are in the healthcare industry. What we developed was a spa event. And the spa event was developed such that it would be held prior to the show hall opening. This worked very well because the entire trade show was held at one location, one hotel location. So working with the client, we secured one of the hotel's meeting room facilities. We transformed that room into our own branded spa for this client. And we then proceeded to target the high-value prospects that we wanted to engage with. We sent them very high-impact solicitation and invitation to come by this spa event for personal, nurturing care. Then when the folks arrived at the hotel, we gave them another invitation to come by our event. We even gave them a T-shirt. We gave them aroma soap. We gave them an aromatherapy candle. All branded, all furthering our message of personal nurturing care.
Let's talk about something there for just a second. You narrowed the focus from all the people coming to this show to a small group of, I would guess, mostly women, nurse supervisors. Sounds like it would be mostly women.
Correct.
From large companies. So by focusing on this much smaller group of women, you were able to create a spa event, which wouldn't work for 95% of the people attending the show, but does work for this smaller select group. By narrowing our focus, we were able to come up with an idea that would really get attention for the people we were targeting.
Correct. Several things there. One, it would be too expensive or cost prohibitive to invite everybody to this event. But more importantly than that, it shows bad marketing. Because again, we want to get and target high-value customers, the customers that are most likely to be very profitable for our firm. So that was this small grouping. Well, the result, Todd, was 78%. 78% of the folks we were going after came to our event and had personal conversations with our healthcare services firm staff. What was so interesting is, of course, we had a certified massage therapist there. We had beauty care folks there that were changing nail color and doing manicures and pedicures. But our healthcare staff was serving these nurse supervisors with smoothies and homemade lemonade and cool spring water. And we're taking the time where they're captive there in that massage chair or they're getting their nails done to just chat with them and interact with them. Our staff was branded in very distinguishable ways so that they were clearly identified. To get into the event, you had to wear a branded T-shirt. And so it was this terrific level playing field where the whole event, the whole room was a brand experience that was highly memorable, highly emotional, and completely on the true, authentic nature of the brand.
I love this image of trying to put myself in their competitor's shoes for when that show opens, because this spa event happened before the show opened, right before the show opened, correct?
Right.
And you mentioned that they had to wear our customer's T-shirt to get to the spa event. So here I am, a competitor to this customer, sitting on the show floor, waiting on it to open. And in walks the best customers that I would likely want to target wearing my competitor's T-shirt, going to my competitor's booth. I'm wondering what just happened.
Well, that just shows you how if we accept this at the show floor tactic of always doing it the same way, we're never going to create different results. But by totally rethinking the way in which we engage with and interface with that audience, we can be more competitive and have greater strides toward creating better results.
There was a second example I would have liked for us to have gone into here, but we've gone over time, so maybe we'll just post a link to that in the show notes. Any final thoughts?
What's so interesting about each of these, Todd, is you start to see that progression we're talking about a 360 plan and approach to trade show effectiveness and overlaying experiential marketing on a trade show. In each case, there's the pre-show, the targeting, the contact strategies. There's the at-show, the experience. And in many cases, we're winning against our competition before the shows are even starting. And then the post-show, there's these great statistics. There's these great outcomes, great benchmarks, and great feedback that we use to improve the process for the next time.
Right. And just to restate the big statistic from this example, this healthcare company got a 78% response rate from its target audience.
Once again, that's outstanding. It's record-setting. But I think what it shows is that effective planning produces great outcomes.
And planning is something that anyone can do. John, how would you like to wrap this up?
Well, I want to remind the audience that this can work no matter the size of your company. You can find strategies and work through this 360 plan of pre, at, and post-show marketing. And you can do it and overlay and interject into that whole plan ways that create these memorable, personal, involving engagements with the audience. And the result of those is you've got great ways to have good conversation, to create good leads that results in profitable business down the road.
That concludes episode 2. We hope you found something useful that will help you be more successful. You can find links to any of the resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes on our website. For this episode, that includes a link to the Saturday Night Live Happy Funball clip on YouTube, as well as the famous Viking quote that John used, who, as it turned out, was actually German. You'll also find a link to the full transcript of this program. Our web address is www.experientialmarketingtoday.com. As always, if you have questions or comments, we welcome those. There are three ways you can get those to us. We have an email address set up. That is feedback@experientialmarketingtoday.com. Or you can post comments on the website beneath each episode. Or finally, you can call us on a comment line. That number is 206-203-4487. On the next episode, we'll talk about what may seem like experiential heresy to some, the concept of using your physical office space as an experiential marketing tool. We hope you'll join us.
Thanks for listening to Experiential Marketing Today.